All right, this is WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. It's the Baltimore Blend. We're here with Deborah Owens and a whole host of experts continuing to share information on the topic, Yes, You Can Afford College. I'm going to turn it back over to Deborah Owens, the host of Wealthy Radio, here with us on the Baltimore Blend.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be here. I always listen to you guys in the morning, and so it's a pleasure to be here talking about a topic that is very, very important so for so many families. We're having coffee and conversation with our panel of experts talking about, yes, you can afford college, but how you can do it smartly. Thank you for joining us. I hope you've been listening. Our last topic is on financial aid and student loans and how you can proceed with caution and do it smartly. And we're really excited because we actually have parents right here on location with us. And so I want to send it over to our parent who has a question for us, Mikhail.
All right. We have parents, we have grandmothers, and we have women who want to go to college. Higher education is so important. PNC, Nancy Bysnack, Deborah Owens, the panelists, we thank you. Let's take it to the audience, and I'll question your name, please.
Hi, I'm Jalila, and I want to ask a question that may have been addressed, but just briefly, you talked about the age of the scholarships and et cetera. What is the extreme age? I know where it starts, but being not quite a senior, but an older preschool student, a returning student, actually, I'm interested in the age limit. And also, the does the scholarships apply to technical and vocational schools?
Ah, that's a good question. So who'd like to take that on?
With scholarships, a lot of it depends on who the entity is that's issuing those scholarships. Some of them might have age stipulations. It might be specific to the program that you're pursuing. I think the person that should really answer this question is Ms. Mary Williams from UNCF. She can tell you more specifically about the scholarships offered by her organization.
So for scholarships, the scholarships vary. Most of them are not for technical. They're tied to STEM or other initiatives. There's no age limit for students who can apply. They're really based on classification. So again, some are for students who are freshmen in college, sophomores, so forth, and some are for high school students. But there is no age classification. So I do invite you to register on uncf.org.
That was Mary Williams, who's still with us in studio with the United Negro College Fund. And one of the things I want to share with seniors, that many or seniors or if you're more mature adults, is many schools allow you to take classes for free after a certain age. I know Howard Community College in Howard County Community College. I don't know if that's true of Baltimore City Community College, but I'd like to send it over to...
It's a state law.
It's a state law? So talk to us about that.
62 is the age, and 62... And it's free for seniors. And some of my senior citizens also qualify for financial aid. So the waiver will pay for their tuition, and the student, if they qualify for Pell Grant, that's money that they can use for books and transportation.
So they should apply for financial aid just like they
don't
any
have
other
to.
Student?
They don't have to for the senior waiver, but I always encourage them to, because some of them are fixed income, which would qualify them for Pell Grant. But a waiver only pays for tuition. It does not pay for the fees.
Yes, but the other question I have for you then, if I am over the age of 62 in the state of Maryland and I am attending colleges, can I qualify for a degree? Is tuition waived and I can actually get a degree?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes.
Great question.
62.
Great. So for
60. It's 60. Corrected. It is 60. It is 60.
Okay, that's excellent. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Okay. I'm so glad you were still here. So I guess the other question, I mean, the good thing about that is for many people, I'm telling folks, hey, you know, 70 is the new 60. For many folks, we're going to have to continue. I'm getting some whoop whoops in here. 70 is the... Yeah, 70 is the new 40. I know that's right. Woo! Just keeping it real, folks, the fact is that we are still operating in an outdated economy. And what I've been talking about so often on Wealthy Radio is that it is the new financial normal. And we're in a different age where, you know, the old school was, you know, you work for one employer your life, you'd retire and have a pension. Well, what many people don't understand is that that change has been happening over the last 30 years. It didn't just change. If you will notice, you no longer have pensions. You have 401ks or 403bs that you're responsible for contributing in. And so as a result, and you're rather than having one job, the average person is going to have 13 jobs. And so the responsibility and the risk has now been put on the individual to take ownership of their financial future. And what I want to say to anyone listening to this program is your greatest asset is your career and your ability to generate an income. And so in order to do that, the reason we're having this conversation with all of the wonderful panelists who were here today is the way you make yourself more valuable and more marketable is through knowledge, is through increasing your competency. And so if you were in school 10 years ago, guess what? We're in a whole new technology world, and you need to do something to make sure you're relevant and that your skill set does not become obsolete. And so it doesn't matter what age you are. It's not only young people, it's people mid-career and people who thought they would be retiring. And 2008 had a tremendous impact. Housing prices have not come back to where they were in 2008. Yes, we're seeing the market has been performing well, but many people have been in recovery. And so as a result of that, we need to begin to think about our lives differently. And I call it shifting from an income mindset, which was that other mindset where you're just going to make a living, to a wealth mindset where we're talking about making investments. And those investments are not just in financial products or securities. That investment is also in ourselves so that we remain competitive. But right now we're talking about college affordability. And the reason I'm so excited to have Tisa Silver Kennedy here, who is Director of Financial Wellness at the University of Maryland in Baltimore, and Beth McSwaney, who is campus relations manager for PNC Bank, is because what's important is that we don't jeopardize our financial future by investing in something that's not going to give us a return on our investments. And I was so excited to hear one of our attendees talk about if you're in mid-career or at another stage where you too want to remain relevant. The fact is, we could live another 30 years. My parents are 87 and 92. So, I mean, what does that mean? You know, back in the day when Social Security was created, life expectancy was 65. So they didn't expect everybody to be collecting all of this money, right? And so now what we have to do is figure out ways where we can make smart financial decisions. And so now, Tisa, I want to go back to that FAFSA, not only the FAFSA process, but I want to maybe bring it to reality. And I want you to share with people, you've been in financial aid, financial wellness for years. What real advice would you give our listeners around not only undergrad, but graduate degrees, financing graduate degrees?
The graduate professional experience is so much different when it comes to the cost of attendance as compared with an undergraduate degree. And just to give some perspective, the people that I normally meet with are people who owe in excess of $250,000 worth of student loans. And a large portion of that often comes from the graduate professional experience. So this is a person who wants to be a medical doctor, a dentist, or a pharmacist. So people with these type of aspirations, I think it's safe to assume many of them know that early on. So there are things that they can do to prepare in advance for that large expense that's going to come along with that graduate degree. And one thing that I think people really need to pay attention, well, actually two things I'll say. First is the just the value that's associated with an education from a community college. For many people, they shun community colleges. They look at them like, oh, this is just the 13th grade. But you can find a comparable education in a much cheaper start for the first 2 years of your collegiate experience, and then really think about where you'd like to go for the third and fourth year, preferably in state. Which leads me to the second thing I'd like for people to consider is state schools, or at least schools that are within their state, because the difference between tuition for a non-resident student and a resident of the state is enormous, especially at the graduate professional level. We could be talking anywhere from $15,000 to $25,000 worth of a difference per year. And if you're in a program that takes an extra 4 years, that's $100,000 of extra debt plus interest because you went to an out-of-state school.
Wow. And so I pose that same question to you, Beth McSwaney. You meet with parents, you meet with students. In reality, what would you share with our audience about the responsibility of loan debt and the things that you need to consider?
Well, a couple of different things, and I'm going to piggyback on one thing Tisa was talking about, was the community college. Not only can you get your general education requirements done at a much reduced cost, many of our community colleges also offer what's basically a parallel enrollment program, so juniors and seniors in high school can be taking college courses. One of my daughter's friends actually attended one of the community colleges in Maryland and finished most of her first 2 years while she was a junior and senior in high school. So she went to College Park, and that also touches on what Tisa said, was going in state was much less expensive because she was a Maryland resident, and she actually was able to complete, you know, she went in as a junior, a college junior, directly from high school. So doing what you can on the front end and starting to save early. There are many investment vehicles that folks can use, and I'm not even going to try and touch on that because that's not within my realm of experience.
Yeah, but I mean, it certainly is mine, and one of the things that we have and probably should have had in this conversation, we'll make sure that we conclude it, that we include it next time, really is the Maryland College Savings Plan. You know, no matter what state you're in, you can go to collegesavingsmd.org or .com, and you can learn about the different programs that are available to you, particularly if you have young children. I mean, if you have aspirations for your child to go to college, then the time to start saving is when that child is born, even before you can set up an account, believe it or not, and be a beneficiary. But really begin to think about saving for college. We know that, my goodness, college, the cost of college continues to rise. And Tisa, for you, in your area of expertise, what should parents anticipate, like the average cost increasing each year? What have we seen in the past?
I do know that Maryland has been nationally recognized for their policies to limit the increases, at least on undergraduate education. At the moment, I can't remember the rate is 3% or 5%, but right now those increases have been held to a minimum. I would tell parents to expect that those costs are going to continue to rise, and so too will the indirect costs that are associated with education. So the earlier you save, and I know you say this all the time, the earlier you save and invest, the greater potential you have to make a return on those investments and prepare for whatever those increases are.
Absolutely. And as it relates to so someone's listening to this, Beth, and they're managing student loan debt, what are some tips that you perhaps could give them about managing that debt effectively? Because one of the things we didn't talk about was, if you take out a student loan, a Parent PLUS loan, or a regular loan, when does that interest start accruing?
On a subsidized loan, it begins accruing once the student separates from the school, so it isn't accruing in their name until that point. But on the unsubsidized, it begins the day that from the very first disbursement. So from the time the loan is disbursed on that unsubsidized loan until that loan is paid in full, that interest is accruing. And students can limit the amount that of that by just simply paying on it while they're in school. So if they're working a job over the summer, pay down some of that interest so that it's not accruing, because what will happen is when the student enters repayment, all the interest that has accrued will capitalize. It will dump in on top. That becomes their new principal, and now they're essentially paying interest on not only the original principal, but the interest that's accrued to that point. The federal government has a number of different repayment plans. If a student goes to, or if anyone goes to studentaid.ed.gov or studentloans.gov, they can find that information on repayment. But there are a number of different repayment programs. Just keeping in mind that the longer that you take to repay a loan, the more interest you're going to pay, so the more expensive it's going to be in the long run.
Ah, that's good advice. Well, the other thing that we didn't touch on, and I'm not sure if either of you have expertise in this, but there are programs that are loan forgiveness programs that if you go into public service, like education, like government service, can you share how that works?
Absolutely. When meeting with my students, I tell them, look for forgiveness anywhere you can find it. The first level is at the federal level, and the most prominent program is the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. And essentially the way that program works is a student is instructed to work in a public service career that could be for certain types of nonprofit organizations or government. And as long as you're working full time and making payments under an eligible repayment plan, and all of your payments are made on time and in full, after 120 payments, you can apply to have the balance of your loans forgiven tax free. So in layman's terms, that means that if you work and pay your loans for 10 years at a minimum, you can have the balance forgiven and not pay taxes on that. There is no formal application for it right now because the forgiveness applies on payments that were made on or after October 1st of 2007. So that's the key date. So the first wave of people applying for and hopefully earning that forgiveness we'll see next winter. But that's the federal level. Each state is different. If people are interested in forgiveness programs for Maryland residents, I would encourage them to visit the Maryland Higher Education Commission, that's MHEC, online, and you can find the different forgiveness programs that are offered by the state and usually tied to your occupation.
However, one of the things you did, you said federal, but if you have private loans, that may not necessarily qualify for those loan forgiveness programs, right?
Exactly. Yeah, the majority of these loans, the majority of loans are under a private lending institution, not going to qualify for those. There are some schools that do offer assistance with loan repayment for both private and federal loans. I know there are some law schools that do that. So that's also something, depending on where you're going to school, does your school have any kind of repayment programs that can assist you with that, or forgiveness programs? So to look for repayment programs, you know, things that assist with that, any kind of forgiveness, and to keep in mind that other than the public service loan forgiveness program, forgiveness programs will carry a tax burden, definitely a federal tax burden and potentially a state tax burden as the laws are written right now.
So what you're saying then is in the event that a loan is forgiven, that would actually be looked at as having income.
Exactly.
So that that could create a taxable event, right?
It certainly could.
If you would like to expand on that, go right ahead, Tisa.
I would. There's also forgiveness for people who pursue careers that are not in public service, but that's the type of forgiveness that is more expensive and takes longer to receive. That could be 20 to 25 years, and with that forgiveness, the forgiven loan debt is considered income, so that would be taxable. So in essence, there is a huge reward for people who pursue careers in public service in that you have to pay those loans for a minimum of 10 years versus 20 or 25. And there's the benefit of not having to pay taxes on that forgiven amount as income.
Ah, that's great. So you know what? You've given us so much insight. One other point that I wanted to bring up is that we recently learned that FAFSA, it used to be in, what was it, January?
And
now
1st.
That FAFSA application date is going to be moved up. Can you give us a sense of how that's going to impact the average person, a parent or person?
Well, the start of the FAFSA will move from January 1st to October 1st, and what we're really hoping is the reason that the President Obama initiated that was because so many people were not filing the FAFSA or not filing it in time to meet certain priority deadlines. So that will hopefully make sure that folks are getting the FAFSAs in. They're getting them in before priority deadlines for the state of Maryland financial aid. That is March 1st. There are some colleges and universities that have earlier priority deadlines, so you need to be aware of that. Check their websites. But hopefully that will help. And the other part of that initiative is we're going back two tax years. So they will be using 2015 taxes. You can automatically pull that information directly through the IRS retrieval system. So you don't even have to be sitting there with your taxes in front of you. You can just pull it directly through. So you filed your 2015 taxes. You do your FAFSA beginning October 1st, and you're done.
Excellent. Well, wow, this went really, really quickly. I want to thank all of our panelists for coming in and joining us for this wonderful conversation on college affordability. I want to thank PNC Bank certainly for sponsoring this, and for Nancy right here, the restaurant right here, providing all of these snacks. Please, everybody in on location, give these folks a round of applause. What I also want to share with our listeners, if you were unable to listen to everything that we discussed today, we had topics around college affordability, scholarships, financial aid, and student loans. This will be rebroadcast, an hour of it at any rate. This conversation will be broadcast this Thursday from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. I want to thank everyone for coming in and sharing this great information. Want to thank the Baltimore Blend for hosting this conversation, and want to just thank our listeners and make sure that you continue to listen to the types of topics that we're going to continue to bring you right here on WEAA, the voice of the community. I'll send it right back to Robert.
And we, of course, want to thank Deborah Owens for sharing and hosting and providing us the coordinating affairs of the experts. We certainly appreciate that, Deborah. And it is the Baltimore Blend. We have been glad to be with you this morning. We also want to thank you, the community, for joining us this morning and tuning in to WEAA 88.9 FM right here in the community. This has been a Baltimore Blend live broadcast at Nancy's. Kevin Brown has been the most excellent host. We love you too, Kevin Brown.
We love you back.
Thank you so very much. The conversation has been, yes, you can afford college, and you certainly can. Brought to you by PNC. I'm Robert Shaheed. Got my partner right here, Mikhail Hunter.
I am absolutely here live on location with everyone. Again, thank you to our moderator and host, Wealthy Radio, Deborah Owens, all of the special guests from PNC, and graciously hosting and allowing us to come in bright and early this morning, Nancy, Kevin, and Bill. Thank you so very much. And don't forget, you can check out WEAA.org for an upcoming podcast and information on the program, a wealth of information. Great start for everyone, whether you're a senior, someone entering college, or a student in college. Where you get the answers that address the community is WEAA.org. We thank you. Peace to the mind, health to the body.